Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Recently, I spoke with sociologist and architecture critic Nathan Glazer to start a series of conversations this summer about New York public housing. He offered a critique of the so-called tower in a park housing developments, as Jane Jacobs did once upon a time. He offered the critique came in Glazer's new book, the so-called housing projects built as what was supposed to be an improvement over crowded tenements once upon a time, but that were to prove so problematic in their own right. But he also pointed out that New York's housing developments were more successful than most.
The fact that New York is uniquely a dense and high-rise city, and the fact that there was good management meant that the New York City Housing Authority and its projects were always in better shape. None of them were ever destroyed or abandoned.
So today we talk to the man who now manages New York's public housing, Tino Hernandez, chair of the New York City Housing Authority, or NYCHA, to find out more about what's going on with public housing right now. Mr. Hernandez, thanks so much for coming in. Welcome to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. Thank you for having me.
Let's start with the numbers, which are so striking, especially they would be to non-New Yorkers. How many apartments and people are there in public housing developments in New York City right now?
Oh, Brian, we do run the largest public housing authority in the country. We are currently comprised of 343 developments across the five boroughs, about 179,000 apartments. We have really 2,700 buildings, and we have an occupancy of probably around 420,000 people just in conventional public housing.
Which I heard somewhere would be the 17th largest city in America if they were a city unto themselves.
Correct. I think that right now public housing represents or houses about 8% of New Yorkers. When you combine our conventional public housing with our Section 8 program, we also run the largest Section 8 program in the country. About 83,000 units, but an additional 270,000 New Yorkers. We are really a city within the city in New York.
What are the requirements to get in these days?
Well, generally, anyone that applies for housing has to go through a rather rigorous income verification process. I would say, on average, a family of four in conventional public housing would have to have an income below $56,500 a year. We are required by federal government to do a rather extensive background check, including criminal background check.
Now, when you say $56,000 for a family of four, does a family of four include two parents and two kids, or would it be different for one parent and three kids?
Generally, we have income requirements per number of people in the unit. And it can be any combination of family members, yes.
Because it's a very different situation then, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The person with a single grown-up household taking care of three kids has much more need.
Oh, sure, yeah. And that would be something that would be factored in.
You oversee also the public, the Section 8, so the voucher program in addition to the actual public owned buildings. Mm-hmm. And the difference is that people can take public Section 8 vouchers anywhere?
Correct. We, as I indicated, Brian, have about probably 83,000 people utilizing the voucher program in New York. And just recently, the mayor and I announced that we will be housing an additional 22,000 New Yorkers in Section 8 over the next 2 years.
How long is the waiting list for the public housing projects, by the way?
It can vary. To be honest with you, there's a tremendous demand for public housing. We have probably a waiting list in conventional public housing of about 126,000 people. That doesn't mean that they're all eligible, but it really depends on their need, their priorities, and obviously our vacancy rate. We have a very low vacancy rate at this point. As you know, New York has a very tight housing market. And our turnover in public housing is really under 1% at this point. We probably have about 9,000 apartments that become available on an annual basis. And some of those are dedicated to people that are need larger apartments so that we do internal transfers as well.
We can take some phone calls, especially from anybody currently living in any one of those 179,000 public housing units in New York City. For the head of the New York City Housing Authority, Tino Hernandez, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, our phone call. Our phone number, give us a call. In the clip that we played, Mr. Hernandez, of the sociologist Nathan Glazer writing about public housing in his new book, he suggested that New York's public housing developments have been more successful than other cities where some have been, you know, even torn down. They've been considered such failures because we all live in apartments here, that that's the nature of New York life. And so maybe it was more amenable to fitting in here. To what do you attribute the relative success?
Well, again, New York is rather atypical than the rest of the country. And while I'm aware that the federal government has had a paradigm shift in policy and has had growing concerns over concentrations of poverty within some of the localities across the country, New York, as I indicated, public housing is part and parcel of the fabric of New York. Just this weekend, I did an event on 92nd Street and 1st Avenue at Isaac Homes to open up a farmer's market, or to actually to celebrate the first anniversary of it. And these are two developments that are nestled really in a very affluent area. So we have developments throughout the city. We have also had the forethought to be able to have a working family's preference, not that these people are making a lot of money, but they're low and moderate income New Yorkers. And so we have a good mix of people within public housing.
What do you think that do? I know it does. That was a big controversy a few years ago when the policy was launched to start to favor more people who have working incomes as opposed to people on welfare. How far has that gone in terms of the numbers? And do you think it's had some kind of cultural impact on the public housing developments?
Yeah, we're not perfect. But, Brian, at this point, I think we're close to about 45% of our residents that are considered working families. And as I indicated, it's not that they're making large incomes. But I do believe that that creates a mix within public housing, and it helps people to sort of care about the places that they live. So I believe that priority, also with the priority of wanting to work to modernize our developments and preserve them, has been something that's been really very well thought out in New York. The mayor and I actually announced a $2 billion plan to modernize and preserve public housing, because the mayor is very committed to public housing in New York.
And not everybody is. John Edwards, as you may have heard, is running for president partly on a campaign platform of breaking up public housing, of trying to de-emphasize that and emphasize more Section 8 vouchers under the theory that people are better off if they can live in the community in a mixed income setting rather than live in concentrations of poor people like high-rise public housing provides. What do you think about that?
Well, if I looked at it dispassionately from a national perspective, I do recognize that people in federal government and national leaders have had some concerns about public housing across the country. But as you indicated in your presentation, New York, I think, is an exception. The sociologist that made the statement, I think, recognizes that New York City has had a very viable public housing system. I believe that we're at a juncture where we have to be creative. So the mayor and I, really under the mayor's leadership, we've done a couple of things. One is, as I indicated, the $2 billion investment to preserve our existing public housing. The mayor also charged the Housing Authority to work with the Department of Housing and Preservation Development to identify properties to be able to build more mixed-income housing. And yes, we do think that the Section 8 program is a viable option for people in New York. So we have more of an integrated strategy here. But the mayor has indicated very clearly that New York City will always have to have both a public health system or hospital system, and that public housing will always be part of the fabric of New York City.
Let's take a phone call. Put on your headphones so you can hear the caller. And Pat in the Bronx, you're on WNYC with Tino Hernandez, head of the New York City Housing Authority.
Hi, that's me?
That's you, Pat.
Okay.
Hi, Pat.
Good. Hi. I have a question. I have a relative who lives on 143rd Street in public housing, and the building is practically empty. And you just said that there's a waiting list of over 100,000 and 126,000.
Do you know that building, Mr. Hernandez?
Do you know the name of the development?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but it's just amazing that it's practically empty.
What's your vacancy rate? Do you have buildings sitting practically empty?
Well, as I indicated, we have. I'd have to find out which building this is exactly. There are a couple of things that happen in public housing, so I don't know the specific development, and maybe we can talk offline so you can give me the location. I can check it out for you. But part of our challenge also, as I indicated, is that we have to modernize and preserve these developments, some of them that were built in the 30s, the 40s, and the 50s. When we do modernization or preservation work, we also have to then vacate people for their own safety and then be able to do modernization and construction work in those locations. I don't know if this is an example of that, but if I can maybe get your number, I can call with you, call you and
so
find
Pat,
out.
So, Pat, off the air, why don't you give our screener your contact information, and do you have a public relations person with you outside?
Yes, I do.
Maybe that person can also talk to Pat and tell her how to get in touch with you. But on what you just said, Nathan Glazer actually also mentioned in his book and in his interview here that maintenance wasn't planned for when NYCHA was established. So with a budgetary crunch, with the decline in federal funding, I guess the planning was not done, and it's still not been fully accounted for because you're being forced to run deficits. How to maintain 179,000 apartments?
Correct. One of the challenges that we're facing right now, as you indicated, is that we've seen a diminution or decrease, or what I call sometimes a disinvestment in federal funds in public housing. I would say that over the last 5 years, cumulatively, we've lost about maybe $439 million in our operating subsidy at a time where we have rising costs, not only in terms of non-discretionary costs like energy, pensions, staffing, healthcare, and the like.
And that's one of the reasons that you announced the plan, which made headlines this spring, to sell parking lot space at several housing developments to build new mixed-income housing in that space and generate revenue from that sale.
Correct. As I indicated, is that we've had declining federal resources. Our capital budget has also been cut over the last 5 years by about 29%. And we have increasing non-discretionary costs. But then the other problem that we have is that at the time of the evolution of public housing in New York, we had the state and city that also built public housing. And I have 21 developments, about 21,000 units that I don't get any federal funding for. The federal government has refused to acknowledge them, and I get no federal dollars for them. So those three factors combined has created a budget gap, and I rolled out a plan to try to close that budget gap.
Katrina in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Katrina.
Hello.
Hi, Katrina.
Hi. I'm a big fan of the show. This is the first time I'm calling.
Thank you.
I have a question about a friend. She was evicted from the apartment that she was in, mainly because her and the landlord didn't get along, and they both agreed, you know, that she should leave. And she ended up in a homeless shelter, and she applied for a portability to Long Island, where she has two job opportunities and, you know, a better situation, but she was denied. And when she tried to find out about an appeal for process, they wouldn't give her any information about it.
So how does that go?
You're talking specifically about Section 8?
Yes.
Okay. Section 8 is portable, and generally we will support those applications. I don't know the specifics of this case.
So again, maybe you can make contact between her and your office.
Right. If you can hold, we will have someone speak to you, and we'll look into the specific case and get back to you.
Sheila in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Sheila.
Hi. Your guest has done a good job about focusing on housing for families. He used the word families many times, and he also talked about what a good mix they had worked out for diversity of residents. But I haven't really heard anything about how many elderly single people are residents, people in their 60s, 70s, nor have I heard anything about what about the families of lesbians and gay people.
Is there a specific policy with respect to that?
Well, right now we have a phenomenon where we have residents that have resided in their apartments for a very long time, and so that we call that phenomenon aging in place. So about one-third of our households across those 179,000 apartments are really seniors. We've also put a very big focus on developing senior housing. We have 42 developments that are for seniors only. We have 15 other buildings that are for seniors within some of our mixed developments. So it's a big priority and something that we care about a great deal.
And how about gays and lesbians, either as singles or heads of households?
Right. I mean, they're entitled to housing just like any other population here in New York. I mean, we obviously don't keep numbers on those things. The other thing that I wanted to add is that for seniors, we work very closely with the Department for the Aging and offer an array of services for seniors within our developments, so that we actually give money and fund Department for the Aging to have community-based organizations provide a wide array of services for seniors in our developments.
We just have a minute left. I wish we had more time. But the ethic around welfare has changed in America since 1996 to this thing that is very much supposed to be temporary. But public housing is permanent as long as, what, you stay below the income threshold?
Correct. For conventional public housing, that's correct.
And is it is there something to encourage people to get out? You talk about aging in place. I'm not sure that's what people's original idea was, for people to age in place rather than use the public housing as a transitional.
You're correct, but I also have to deal with the realities of the tight market and the cost of our rent in New York. But we are working on some creative projects. For instance, we're looking at identifying higher income earners and motivating them through financial literacy to become homeowners. And we're working with HPD on programs such as that. A lot of the developments we're doing, we're about ready to roll out about three development projects on the west side.
And we have to leave it there because we're out of time. But we will continue later this summer with our series of conversations about public housing. The head of the New York City Housing Authority, Tino Hernandez, thank you very much
for coming. Thank you, Brian. I'll welcome to come back.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.